from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 222, recorded live Thursday, July 15th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Stack Overflow Creative Director Jin Yang.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, we're chatting with the creative director of Stack Overflow, Jin Yang, also someone who is crushing me currently in Words with Friends, an online Scrabble game. Hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
So you're a designer, and you self-identify currently as a designer?
Yes, I think I've always been a designer, but for a while I worked as a developer. So I speak your language somewhat.
How did you start? Did you start as a developer?
No. Well, since I was in high school, I was always interested in design and the technical side. I got, this goes back a little bit further. When I was in high school, my parents bought me my first computer. It was a 486, 33 megahertz, 4 megs of RAM. That was a big deal back then. So I always did graphic work on that. And at the same time, I was interested in games and, you know, log on BBS. And so I really liked to tinker with computers. I remember I had a stack of boot disks. You know, you had to have different memory booters for different games back then. So I always liked to tinker. So and when I actually went to college for computer engineering, believe it or not, it was a choice of school of design or computer engineering. And my Chinese parents wanted me to have a real job one day, so.
Wait a second. So you wanted to go to school like for design or art design, but your parents were too hardcore.
Yeah, because in high school I took architecture and drafting and art for 4 years. So I was really into that, and of course all the computer skills I had I taught myself. And my parents said no school design because they didn't want me to be a starving artist. So I kind of just caved in, and I later regretted it.
Wow, is that a Chinese thing or is that a your parents thing?
I think overall it's a Chinese thing. Of course, I'm just being stereotypical here. I think it's either doctors or
well, you get to be stereotypical because you represent 50% of all the Chinese people on this call.
Yeah, that's true. I can do that.
Do that. I represent all the Scottish people.
Okay,
I can pick on them like they suck and everything. So I can say that because I'm Scottish.
Right, but I think it was a really good experience regardless. I kind of wish I picked computer science, though. I picked computer engineering, which was mostly electrical engineering courses, and some courses of computer science. I took assembly, data structure, you know, C++. It was just a really good experience, I think, because, you know, in school engineering, you're taught to be analytical. You have to work in a team where I think if I had chosen the art school, I honestly don't know how that would affect me today. Because I think I had a pretty good analytical skill as well.
Okay. But you were just like kind of doing art on the side here or what?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I always drew, sketched, and just did, I think my first graphic program was Photoshop 2.0. That was way back. That was before layers. You know, if you wanted to make a simple drop shadow effect, you had to do two images. You know, for example, if you want to have a drop shadow on a text, you have to have one image just with your text and another image with offset text blurred. And then you have to calculate those two, you know, the difference between those two. Mm-hmm. So you get this drop shadow effect and you have to paste that back onto the original text. So it was really a pain. So that's why I keep on telling designers these days, you know, it's like cheating. You can just do all these awesome effects with one layer in Photoshop today.
There's always been that strange impedance mismatch between the Photoshop comp, you know, the Photoshop composite, and then and now I have to turn it into the web, you know. I was always frustrated with designers because they would come up with this ridiculous design. And I would just say, that doesn't look like a web page. It looks like a T-shirt.
Yeah, there are definitely designers who produce stuff like that, and I'll definitely get into that. Regarding your question, I was a designer, I would say, because I was lucky. I got my first web design related job back in 1995. Of course, I wouldn't really call it web design back then because you can't really design anything for Mosaic browser, right? You remember Mosaic?
Wow.
I remember it because, you know, it's just a standard gray background with a Times Roman font. Because back then, I remember you couldn't even put an image tag in a table cell because, you know, back then you had to rely on table cell to lay out your page. Luckily, I think Netscape came out shortly after that. So Netscape was pretty awesome back then.
So you've been designing that long. You were actually designing with browsers that weren't able to do anything like what you wanted them to do.
Yeah, funny story, because my first website, it was off my college account, school account. Of course, it was a really typical URL back then. You're off at www.edu/user/ this really long URL. And I remember I made my first web page. It was really awesome, and at least I thought it was. And then I posted the link on Usenet because, you know, Usenet was really, news groups were really big back then. Mm-hmm. And then I got these complaints. That was the first cross-browser complaint I ever got because this lady was using links. She was saying, all I see is these image tags. You know, I have no idea what they are. And I was like, what is links? And then later I found out it was a text-based browser. So I learned I had to put all text in there so those people can see.
It's lucky that you didn't drop out of design at that point.
Yeah, my first job, you know, of course, back then, it was really easy to learn HTML because the first draft was, I think there were less than 20 tags, HTML tags, and there was no CSS. My first job was with the university's agriculture department, and my first task was convert 2,000 some WordPerfect documents into HTML by hand. Because back then, there weren't any what-you-see-what-you-get editor or some kind of... Well, there was one. There was a Unix program called Hotdog where it can automatically parse HTML, but poorly. So I think that was kind of like a boot camp on hand-coding HTML.
Doesn't that sound like kind of a task that you would automate? I mean, I guess this is what I want to discover and like dig into is the mind of the coder versus the mind of the designer. And because you were a coder and a designer, you're kind of like my spy on the inside. You know, you can like sneak over and hang out with like the hipster, cool, you know, well-dressed, designer people and then report back to the developers. But how many documents did you have that you had to convert?
2,000 something.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't do those manually, did you?
I actually did. I did at least 1,000. And later on, I tried, you know, that program I mentioned, Hotdog, and it wasn't that good. It did 80% of the job for me, but I still had to go back and clean up some.
Man. Yeah, like anything that you have, like from a programmer mindset, anything you can do twice, you can automate.
Right, right.
So, like, maybe even if the tools didn't exist, I don't think that I guess I would say if you couldn't automate it, I wouldn't even do it. That's just the idea of doing it manually is.
Right. See, back then, I wouldn't call myself a programmer then because that was in 1995. That when I was first introduced to the web. But as soon after that, I started picking up more developer skills because, you know, simple HTML static website just didn't cut it anymore. And especially when I freelance, you know, my clients keep on asking more and more stuff. You know, they want dynamic content, you know, that's why I learned classic ASP back then. So, you know, I used to set up these Access database or SQL Server and using classic ASP, which I really liked, believe it or not. I thought it was pretty simple. Of course, back then, I believe ASP only had 5 intrinsic objects, right? Request, response, server, session. I don't know if you count dictionary as an object.
Now you're trying to prove your developer chops with the request, response, server, cache, application. I don't remember what they were. Something like that?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to flex some muscle here.
It doesn't matter.
In fact, yeah, later on I just moved to ASP.NET. I was actually certified in ASP.NET VB, which Which is funny, after that, I just stopped using .NET. Actually, I stopped programming altogether because I just couldn't keep up with these new versions of .NET coming out every year.
Mm-hmm.
So back
But don't you have to keep up on design, though? I mean, you're saying that you quit programming because you didn't like keeping up with all the speed of stuff, but isn't there always stuff going on in design? I mean, do designers,
Design, design is a little bit different. I would say, web design is constantly evolving because, you know, web design, unlike the traditional print design, web design is still technology-based, right? There are new HTML specs coming out and new CSS specs, and there are new ways using JavaScript or jQuery to do things. So that aspect I had to keep up with. But that's really easy, though, because HTML and CSS are just simple markup language. And there are tons of jQuery libraries. So that part is not hard. But the other aspect about design, I think it's a lot more timeless. For example, you know, the traditional design principles such as typography, layout, you know, color theories, those have been long established. And that part does not change that much. So to me, it's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
And another reason I quit programming is not because I hated it. I really, really enjoyed the aspect. But I always consider myself as a coder instead of a programmer. Do you know what I mean?
Because, and that's something I want to talk about, definitely.
Yeah, because, as I said, the only reason I pick up programming skill is to aid my design. It's mm-hmm. not I wanted to be this awesome programmer. That's why I pick up programming. It just, clients demand a lot more, and I was freelancing on my own in the late 90s, and that's why I learned SQL, you know, database store procedures, and I just found I was not very good at it. You know, I'm sure there were better ways to write SQLs than the crap I was coming up with. So I just thought, you know what, it's not fair for a project if I code, because I know I'm not the best programmer out there. I'd rather to have a really awesome program do that part, and I just do the part I like and I'm good at it, which is the front end. I really, really like front end, because to me it's a lot more gratifying, because when you push a design out there or you code a front end, and people will see that right away, whereas if I'm just writing these lines of ASP code in back end, nobody will see it. You know?
So you like to be out front and have people really know that, hey, I made that.
Well, it's not really for the notice is more like I like to design that layer where it directly interacts with the users. I like to hear users' feedback, you know. Whereas, you know, the users can't really judge the backend code unless, you know, the application is really slow or something.
One of the things that I want to understand is the difference between the designer mind and the developer mind. And this is kind of why I wanted to have you on because I think you understand both.
Right.
It's so fundamental. Like, you're either a designer or you're not. There's not like you're kind of half a designer or you're okay with design. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone knows what's pretty and everyone has a sense of aesthetic. But I mean, ultimately, it seems to me like the difference between a designer and a developer is a developer starts with by going and searching the web for free CSS templates, and a designer starts in Photoshop. That's like how I describe it. But I want to understand from you, like, what the difference between the process is between the two kinds of people.
I think what you describe is pretty typical, because I remember last year I was reading John Galloway's blog where he. I think the title was The Designer-Developer Workflow Crisis. Actually, I have this slide up here. So he had this flowchart on this blog, and I think this is really typical flow of typical corporate or government environment, which I think is really flawed. And just like what you described, he said it starts with designer creates a page mockup in Photoshop or Illustrator, and the designer hands, you know, the programmer this PSD file, and they go back and forth. They don't agree on design, and then it's just a waste of time. I think it's very important that the team has to all start at the same point. I think a typical overflow would be, you know, when you have an app, web app, or a website to build, and that user requirements, and developers would just come up with what functions we should have on there, and once. They may give the designer a wireframe and say, hey, go, here's all the stuff you need to mock it out, just make it pretty. And I think that you really need to get the designer involved first, because it's more than just visual. Otherwise, you're just hiring a pixel pusher.
Are you saying that the designer is also the UX designer? Or in big organizations, it seems like the one who makes it pretty is different from the one who organizes the experience, is different from the one who designs the information architecture. Or is that just enterprise BS language?
I think that just it's a little bit of that, because to me, a good web designer, although the term I think is really convoluted these days, there are so many specializations, a good web designer should be able to do all that. There's just absolutely no reason not to. Because a web designer is not just somebody who makes your graphics pretty, right? Otherwise, you're just really hiring this graphic monkey. Because web design is really a visual solution and interaction solution. So if you have a designer in your first meeting, you know, work alongside with the programmers, you know, the designer can have input. What's the best way to design, for example, a widget or the page flow? And then the designer can mock up these wireframes. And that's why wireframes is important, because it's bare bone. It has no visual. So nobody can have a preference, say, hey, I don't like this color. I don't like this around the corner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that typically in corporations, it's always like form follows function, right? As long as it works first, and then we'll worry about making it pretty or flows better.
Yes.
Better. And yeah,
that's exactly right. Exactly right. I design it in black and white, and then I'll let somebody else, like, put a coat on it later and make it pretty.
Right. See, the design has always been an afterthought, and it really you should get a designer involved from the beginning, because your product isn't just how it works, it's how it looks, how it feels, right? Because if you can have this awesome web app, you have so many talented programmers, but if your end result is not polished, that really damages your branding, right? Because when a user comes to your site, before he even starts using the site, if he sees this is like not polished, this is so amateurish, it really affects your site's reputation.
How do I know if a designer is good other than that I look at their stuff and say, that's pretty to me? Because I can only look at the end result, right? Like with a coder, I can review their code. I could find statistics and analysis and do static analysis on their code. I could, speak to people about how they worked on a team and how productive they were with various measures. How do I look at a designer and find out whether or not they have a wrong-headed design process? Right, considering that I'm hiring someone to do something that I don't know anything about.
Right, that's a good question. I actually interview a lot of designers in the past. You know, the first question I always ask them, even on the during the phone screening, was, what is your blog URL? And if they would say, I don't have a blog, and then I would ask, so what design blogs do you read? And if they say, I don't read anything, I pretty much would just end the call right there. because I strongly believe in designers should blog, or at least actively reading design blogs out there. Because this really shows an aptitude. You know, they want to further better themselves. And it is a plus if they have a blog. Because a lot of times designers can put these, you know, work they've done, and they may be good, but you don't know what part of that project they worked on, you know. And you don't know if they really did it. But if they have a blog where they can actually write their thoughts, so you get to know the person a lot better than just looking at some pretty pictures. I think it would be the same way you interview a programmer too, right? Because I would, you know, you don't just say, show me what you did. In fact, I think it would be harder for programmers to show their portfolio because the code is all behind, you know,
right,
on the web server. So I would go from there. Of course, as far as looking at their work, I think that just really a matter of taste, and it's not that hard to tell if a design is good or bad.
This is the part of the show where I mock you. Well, actually, Telerik mocks us. Your applications that you're testing dependent on external systems over which you have no control. Maybe you're being slowed down by those systems, their lack of availability, responsiveness. You want to do TDD right? Our friends at Telerik help you solve some of those problems with their newest mocking tool, JustMock. It let you do fast, simple, controlled unit tests independent of external resources like databases, web services, proprietary code. Unlike some mocking tools, JustMock works with non-virtual methods, sealed classes, static methods, giving you complete control of your code. You can get more details. You can download JustMock at Telerik.com/JustMock. And don't forget to thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/Telerik. Thanks a lot. This is why I have people on the show, so I can ask kind of inappropriate questions. But sometimes when I have a designer working with me at a company full time, I think to myself, what is this person going to be doing for 40 hours a week? And I think that the higher up in the company you go, depending on whether or not they appreciate design, that question of we don't need a designer full time because they're just going to do a comp and they're going to write something in Photoshop and then they're going to hang out for like 6 months. So, I'm being honest with you, right? Remember, I'm a programmer, right? So, I know I can keep a programmer busy 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week.
Well, let me ask you, where you work at Microsoft, what does it your designer actually do? Are you saying they simply...
Well, I don't know. Do it? I mean, we have a couple of designers. Like, they have actually several designers on MSDN that do stuff, and they do lots of different websites. But, I mean, there's like, when we're in the middle of the design process, there's like a flurry of comps and new stuff going on, and then there's kind of quiet for a little while, and then there's a flurry again, and that's just, again, I'm not involved in the design process as much for the way that the, you know, I don't chop up the graphics. I'm right. Farther downstream, so I'm just speaking more generically. I'm not speaking about Microsoft in general, but
I think what you described is fairly typical. See, I already see a problem there. You shouldn't be the one that's, chopping the design up to HTML. I think that's designer's job, web designer's job. That's why they're called web designers, not just a graphic designer, right?
Mm.
The reason I say that is I think I DM you a blog post I wrote about my feeling on if web designers should code, and I have a strong opinion on this, and I think any web designer who's worth their checks should be able to write HTML, not just HTML, good HTML, proper semantic HTML and CSS.
Like almost like final? Would you go so far as to say that they're creating HTML that is shipping?
Yes, that's what I do. Of course, okay. With Stack Overflow, some of the projects I've worked on, they already had the HTML made, so I just put the CSS skin over that. But typically, what I do, I'll explain my design process. When I was first given a project, the first thing I need to do is I had to identify who I'm making the website for. Of course, this is not for the person who pays me a check or my boss even. It's really for the people who will be using the website, right? Because that's ultimately your end user. And then, I learned the design goal. What is this website trying to do? Is it sell a product or is it... Mm-hmm. Just promoting somebody, or it's a web app, then I would choose my design styles differently. For example, web apps, repetitive use. I do not make it graphic intensive because for web apps, the visuals have really high diminishing return. You want to keep it really simple so the user can focus on what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, come up with, so what kind of mood we want to set up with this design, because ultimately it's all about setting up that mood. That's what separates good designs from excellent designs.
Really?
How their website
sets up a mood.
Yes, that's always the secret design, is just simply invoking that emotional response. That's all there is to it. Everything in between just means to an end. So,
that's cool though. I like that. I mean, that like it breaks it down. The code's job is to get it done.
Right. I mean,
and
I can
the design
talk about
evokes a mood.
Right. I can talk about topography and layout, out the white space, all that. But ultimately, your goal is simply triggering a mood. I mean, I think that's true with all designs, or even industrial designs. Right. You want something that just feels good. I mean, maybe that's not always the mood you want to set. Maybe sometimes you want to make a website that people feel sad so they can donate money, but that's still a mood. That's all you're aiming for. So it took me a while to realize that, because when I, back in the 90s, I I think I was more of a decorator because there were all these cool trends, you know, the 90s, you know, the 45 degree lines, tiny little font, you know, that was a trend back then. So I did a lot of crappy websites with that style. And then because it took me a while, what makes a good design, you know, is that's all there is to it. You know, it really triggers this emotional response. If it's on web app, you want maybe something really clean, really fast, and because you don't want something slow. Or, for example, take Barack Obama's website. I thought it was really well done, regardless of your political affiliation. I think because back then I was working for the government. I work at FCC, and I was familiar with how the government websites look, and that site just blew me away. I thought it was really well done, and of course, on top of all the social media stuff he did too.
So how many government websites did you do? Because that seems like death to a designer. Like, wow, I'm a designer, I'm creative, I'm awesome, and I'm going to go work for the government.
That's a funny story. I did some consulting for the North Carolina state government back in the late 90s, and then I went back in 2004, I believe, just because I met some really cool people there. The reason I wanted to work in the government is because, first of all, I feel government is kind of like underdog when it comes to web standards. You know how they lag years behind industry standards? Mm-hmm. So all my designer friends kind of made fun of me because they were working on these glamorous, you know, client freelance projects. Here I was just, you know, government building cube and cranking out their website. So maybe it was a pride thing. I just believe I could make it better. And I did to a lot of them, so I was kind of proud of it. So the last one I did was, if you go to FCC.gov, of course, that's still the old site. It's not up yet. I think that site was done in 2001. It has not been changed yet. Of course, I was not responsible for that. But if you look at their new site, it's called reboot.fcc.gov.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the sites I work on for FCC and with the new administration. And they put a lot of focus on the web, too. And the new media team is very web savvy. They know how to, you know, get on Twitter to gain a lot of followers and Facebook and all that.
Yeah, I'm looking. I went to it's FCC.gov. And this is a very dry, boring.
Yeah, that's pretty much your standard kind of government website.
Kind of late 90s style, very typical looking government right. website. And then in the upper corner, there's a page curl
right.
with. It says and a big thing that says reboot.fcc.gov, and then this is very kind of light, fresh, while still being governmenty in the sense that it looks official, but it's just not boring. Kind of big navigation
right.
thing, and it's a much. It looks like a totally reasonable website that could exist in 2010.
Right, and that's still not the final FCC.gov. I know they're in the process of revamping the FCC.gov, but it's a huge task. There are hundreds of thousands of static HTML documents and Word documents, so it may take a while to convert all of them. But I believe the new site will be very good too.
Well, it's interesting because I'm looking at this website, and they've got like, it's like I see like FCC Connect, and they've got like Twitter and MySpace, and I'm like, really, the FCC is on Twitter? Do I care? And I click on it, and they've got 350,000 followers.
Yes, exactly. I think we were competing with the Justice Department, and they had 350,000.
That's insane. That's insane.
Yes. Trust me, there are some really good people working at the FCC right now. There will be some huge changes.
Well, and then they've got a discussion area here where, like, a question, and they have a little poll, and it says, how can the FCC improve use of online tutorials? So I clicked on that thinking that it's going to be some lame, you know, radio button poll. They're
right.
using user voice. And they actually did the graphics on user voice and updated the site. So it
right.
doesn't
it
look like
a
user voice.
Right. It was a total branding package. If you go to their YouTube page or Facebook, it's all, you know, it's all look consistent.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I just clicked on YouTube and they've got the colors and everything all right. Yeah, so
yeah,
you worked on the whole visual style for all of this stuff?
I worked with another designer who worked on the Obama campaign with us. She was really good. We collaborated a lot on these. Of course, you know, there's a big team of developers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely a team effort.
Wow. Well, that's cool. I wonder if there were any web designers before. On in the government.
Well, typically the government is, you know, most of their IT work are done by contractors. So it really depends on if the contractors are good or not. And also it has a lot to do with the focus, whether the management on top want to do anything about a website.
Yeah. I did this video that I put up. I've done this talk a couple of times where I talk about social networking for developers, and it's an hour long talk, and I put it up on Channel 9 yesterday. But the general postulate, the general theory, like, you know, welcome to my talk, every developer needs to be blogging. And
I agree. See, I think, you know, as I said, I feel the same way about designers as well, but I think the biggest excuse I've heard when they do not want to blog is I don't have time, right? I don't know if you heard of that.
Oh, yeah, that's the number one excuse is I'm doing real work. I'm not going to blog.
Because I always told people, I said, if you just say you blog, you spend 2 hours on blogging a week, I think that's reasonable, right? And that would be, you know, that adds up to a day in no time, just in a month. It's like you spend one day, that's still better than nothing. And it's not like you have to blog every single day. You know, you can just, because I remember when I first started blogging, I asked Jeff Atwood, I said, what advice can you give me? And all he said was, blog at a pace you can live with, right? It can be once a week or once a month. It doesn't even matter as long as you keep that pace. And it will become easier and easier to you. And eventually it just feels natural to write your thoughts out. So it's not really that much of an effort. And I think the second excuse is like nobody will read my blog. You know, I'm not internet famous. Nobody will read it. So I just think that's a wrong mentality to have. You should write for yourself, you know, to become a better writer over time. And that's why you should write.
Is it about communication or is it about having an online portfolio?
Both, I believe. I mean, your portfolio, if you did a project, you can blog about it. You can say what my design process was. A lot of times you can, I guess, do meta-blogging. That's what Jeff calls it. You blog about different aspects of design. And then you'll get comments from other designers. You know, you would, you know, exchange thoughts or debates, whatever. And it's a learning process, too. I've learned a lot from the commenters on my blog.
I've been visiting your blog and poking around. And there's a couple of things that I've noticed, remembering that I'm coming at this from a developer perspective. And it's funny because it's a nice blog and you're a good writer and it's very pretty. But like, I think I was bugging you about this earlier. It's like the first thing I see when I show up at your blog is a giant photograph at the top.
Right. And you're telling me that was too big, right?
It's huge because it's like, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, you know, where's the words, man? You gotta scroll down to see the words. And then I was looking at your announcement on the blog where you say, I'm going to go work for Stack Overflow. And you have this picture at the top, and it's this picture of like some fruit, and it's overlooking a New York harbor. And I'm like, oh, this is lovely. I wonder where he got this stock photography. And then I'm looking in the comments here, and not only did you take that picture at Joel Spolsky's office, but this is the part that blows me away. And this is the real difference between a developer and a designer. Like someone's like, yeah, okay, great picture. What kind of post-processing did you do? I'm like, post-processing. I'm like, this is a discussion between two designers. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, this is you talking. Oh, I just overlaid some few colored layers over the original, a little tan, a little blue, put the blending mode overlay into hue, and I did some curve adjustment on different channels. And I'm like, wow, that's like an afternoon for me. And you probably banged that out in like 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, I can see why you think the photo is too big. But as I said, well, first of all, nobody visits my homepage, really. Most, according to my Google Analytics, most people actually just, you know, go to individual articles. So homepage isn't that visited much. But the point of that big photo is to set a mood, right? Because it actually took me a while what to put on my homepage. A lot of designers put on their, you know, big close-up of their face or whatever. And I'm not very photogenic, and I definitely did not want to use my photo there, and I just thought it would be a little bit tacky. So I just wanted to put a photo there and make people look at it for 10 seconds and say, what the hell is this? You know, it's creating that mood, kind of like mysterious. That's why if you go to my blog, a164.org, you will just see this giant robot I photoshopped in this Aaron's Space Museum. It looks like a real one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all the point of it. It just, you know, you trick people a little bit. As far as the Fall Creek one, I could just use the standard photo I took, but I really wanted to give that soft vintage look. You know, it's not really so out there. And that's just part of setting up the mood, and that's what I was talking about.
The part that's amazing is that you knew what the motions were that you had to do in the tool in order to evoke that mood. And that's the part that I'd love to learn, but I realize that I don't know if it can be, I mean, I can learn to be a fake designer.
But I was going to give, like, since most of your listeners are programmers, and I have a list of suggestions,
Great.
Right. I mean, you don't have to try to be like a designer. I think what's more important is you should have a good taste. I mean, I think that part you can develop over time. I mean, the stereotype is programmers have no taste. You know, they make these ugly websites. And I think some of them are like that, but most programmers I've dealt with are not like that. For example, the programmers I'm working with at Stack Overflow, mm-hmm. and you know, there are maybe two or three main groups. You know, they work on different projects. So I've been involved in all of these. And they really surprised me. They have really good taste. You know, they may not be able to create these graphics, but they have good taste, so they can offer me really good suggestions. I will give you a list of blogs, and maybe you can put them in the podcast.
Absolutely.
Like the websites you should visit. And I think it's really... Well, first of all, the easiest thing is just go to Wikipedia, look up typography. I think that's a big thing. And I had a lot of programmers, friends say, why is it, what's the difference between Helvetica and Arial? Why does it even matter? These are just text, you know? It's not like I can't even tell.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, good typography, it doesn't matter. You know, there's kerning, there's spacing, and some fonts are just better than others, you know? But this is the type of thing I don't think you have to consciously notice, because honestly, sometimes depending on the capital letters, I can't tell if they're Helvetica or Arial, especially capital E, you know. But I think, you know, just read up, go to Wikipedia, look up typography, and you will see tons of links, and you will know why it actually does matter. And the more you read about it, the more you can appreciate what designers do.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend to the listeners that they should have several design blogs in their in their reader list?
Yes, I think so. You can always go to atlistapart.com, which is, you know, one of the better design blogs. It's published quite, I believe, 2 articles per month, or 2 weeks. Two weeks. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. And there are other ones. I'll send you a list so you can put them in the blog. And definitely do not think, you know, form follows function, where function follows form. And one of my favorite design quotes is by Frank Lloyd Wright. I'm just paraphrasing here. He said, form follows function, that is very misunderstood. Form and function should be one, joined in a spiritual union. You know, it's really one thing, right? For example, I hate to sound like a Apple fanboy, but I think I talked to you about Apple stuff on Twitter before. But if you look at their stuff, it doesn't matter if you like their stuff or not. You know, they really focus on everything. It's not just how it looks, and it's also how it works, right? Everything, and even the marketing, this is one consistent package. That's why they're able to, you know, impress your general public, you know. And so I think that's very important.
Yeah, the fact that it's a complete, cohesive, thoughtful unit.
Right.
Even though you know that there's a marketing department, there's a design department, there's a coding department, that doesn't come out. I think at Microsoft we definitely see the distances, the white space between our organizations.
The thing that always surprised me is I do believe there are a lot of talented designers working at Microsoft. And I remember last year I watched the Microsoft 2019 concept video.
Oh yeah.
I was very, very impressed, and in fact, I think I blogged about it too. It kind of just blew me away. No offense, I did not expect that from Microsoft. I was like, wow, this is so awesome. Because the UI is so unique. It has this cel-shaded, translucent, you know, interface. It wasn't copying Apple. It was not pretentious, you know. And I was just surprised. So why is this for 10 years from now? Why not just use this UI today? You know, that can definitely compete with Apple. So I feel like Microsoft has a lot of these cool concepts, but that's all they are, just concepts. You know, you had the Microsoft Surface. First time I saw the demo video, I thought, wow, that's awesome. But it just never came out. Apple got the touch interface on iPhone and iPad.
That's the thing, right? It's the designing it is one thing, and shipping it and having it still be true to the design is the
right. That's
thing.
Why Steve Jobs said, you know, artists ship. So it's kind of like
ship?
I think that's how what Microsoft did with Windows 3.5, right? They shipped before IBM's was that OS. I remember that's how Windows got really popular, because IBM was trying to polish, you know, their final product, where Microsoft just shipped Windows out. And by the time IBM was going to ship, it was a little bit too late.
Oh, I like that. I think that might be the title of the show, Artists Ship. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today, Jin Young.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.